You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. An AI developer races against time to create a computer program that can save his son from the mysterious illness that seems to be killing him. It sounds like the premise for a science fiction novel, but it's a true story. Matthew Might is director of the Hugh Call Precision Medicine Institute at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. His son, Buddy, has a rare genetic disease, and this past May, he became extremely ill. Might put an experimental algorithm into action to come up with possible causes and treatments. It's a story that hints at how artificial intelligence could transform medical care. Matthew Might, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
When did you first sense that something was amiss for Buddy?
So it was Star Wars Day, and I had taken him to the Science Museum, and he was fine around lunch, but by dinner, he seemed to be having difficulty breathing. He's a medically complex child, but even by his standards, he seemed really labored and something just wasn't quite right. So I said, yeah, we have to do something about this now.
Take us back before this. You mentioned that Buddy is, as you said, a medically complicated child. He has a genetic disorder that is quite possibly unique. So what is that disorder?
Yeah, the disorder is called NGLY1 deficiency or NGLY1 deficiency. And in fact, he was the first patient ever discovered with that disease. It is an extremely rare genetic disorder. He's still the only one with his genotype ever seen. But there are about 70 or so kids that have effectively the same missing gene as him that present similarly.
And how long did it take to diagnose Buddy with that illness from the time he was a baby and you were first noticing that, you know, he was not hitting developmental milestones perhaps the way he should have been?
So that was about a 4-year process back then. You couldn't just magically look in someone's genome at the time he was born, but it became available in the early years of his life through research studies. So we were able to look in his exome and find out that he effectively had this missing gene.
Hmm. Well, Matthew Might, at that point, your research was more in the area of cybersecurity, right? And you now lead a Precision Medicine Institute at University of Alabama. Was there one day when you just woke up and said, you know, I've got to use my computer skills to help my son? Or was it a more gradual transition?
It was a very gradual transition. So yeah, by training, I'm an academic computer scientist. I spent most of my career doing, cybersecurity, programming languages, things like that. But at parallel, I was trying to solve this mystery of my sick child. And eventually, that personal passion became a professional passion. But it was a gradual process. And there were some step functions along the way. So I've actually been on the faculty at the Harvard Medical School for about 4 years and ended up doing a term of service in the White House on the Precision Medicine Initiative. So it was a process that pushed me over the line. Then eventually I went entirely full circle into precision medicine when I joined UAB.
So this past May, you're out with Buddy and he seems to be having trouble breathing. What happened once, you kind of got him to a doctor and tried to figure out what was going wrong?
So we got him to the ER. And they said, oh, this looks like septic shock. Almost immediately, they said, this looks like septic shock. And that freaked me out because I realized at that point he had about a 50% chance of survival just from that alone. I'm a computer scientist by training, so I fired up an AI tool that I had built called Medicanron to start asking it questions about septic shock. And I asked things like, well, what causes septic shock? What does septic shock cause? And how do you treat it? And right away from that, I noticed something that was unique to his condition. The tool actually suggested using albumin as a potential treatment for septic shock. And that's important for him because every child with his disorder has low albumin by default, which further increased his odds of dying from septic shock. So I relayed that immediately to the treating physicians, and they immediately put him on albumin supplementation. And that may already have been the reason he even survived the very first night in the hospital.
Why, though, would you turn immediately to an artificial intelligence algorithm as opposed to just pulling up Google? Septic shock is a very dire condition, but it's not incredibly rare. You know, why did you immediately think, well, I need help from an artificial intelligence algorithm to deal with this situation?
I mean, a couple of reasons. One, personally, is I'm not a medical doctor. I have a PhD in computer science instead. So I don't have the background medical knowledge. But with this tool, I can acquire it pretty quickly. And so, for that matter, can anybody else. Secondly, this tool isn't like Google where, you know, you search for a term and it just shows you the pages that have that term. This tool actually reads those pages. And so it can understand whether or not the page or the paper it has read says something like, this is used to treat this condition. So I can ask it a very specific question, not just show me all the pages for septic shock. I can say, show me all the treatments for septic shock ever proposed by any paper anywhere.
And how was this algorithm originally developed, and why was it originally developed? Obviously, you did not write this in the span of 1 hour specifically to address Buddy's situation.
That's right. So this is a tool that we have been building at the Precision Medicine Institute at UAB for quite some time now. It's about a year and a half old at this point. And it's developed under a program at NIH through NCATS. It's called the Translator Program. And this effort is really trying to categorize and structure all of the biomedical knowledge out there anywhere into a format such that you can automatically reason about it. So we've been developing this tool as part of that program now for quite some time. And we're very lucky that I happened to have it on hand as he began this crisis.
That is, I think, perhaps a different model than many of us have in mind when we think about how artificial intelligence might be deployed in a medical setting. There's a lot of fear about the possibility of automating medicine. And what you're describing is more like an assistant to the physician, that AI is playing an assisting role. Is that how you imagine or envision AI moving into the medical setting?
Absolutely. I really see AI as more of a tool for medical enhancement and, you know, enhancing the physician, giving them abilities that they didn't previously have, because ultimately it's really about that physician's clinical insight at the end of the day and what they choose to do for helping that patient. So I would never dream of getting rid of clinicians or physicians. I think that's a fantasy anyway. And it's what we really want to do is assist them, absolutely, and enhance them to the extent that we can. You know, imagine what you could do if you could give every physician rapid, deep access to the sum total of all medical knowledge. That's really what we want to do.
Well, Matthew Mite, your son's acute illness this past May was the first test run for Medi-Canron, and you said that it immediately popped up this one idea. Perhaps giving albumin could help deal with what appeared to be septic shock. And the doctors took that advice readily, you said, and did give your son albumin. Did that work? Was that a success?
Well, that was really the beginning of a five-week odyssey. And just to clarify, we have deployed Medi-Canron plenty of times clinically over the past year, but this is really the first emergency use of Medi-Canron where it had to be done in real time. So the albumin helped on that first night, but that was the beginning of a five-week odyssey. And it was very difficult to figure out the cause of this what was clearly an infection. And after literally 3 weeks in, we still didn't know what was driving this infectious process. And so he was just fading more and more day by day. I mean, he'd even coded in the ICU at one point, and I honestly thought he was going to die. And that's really when I said, wait a minute, I'm sitting on this tool, all this knowledge, why don't I write an extension for it that could try to predict what he has, what this infection really is? So it was over Memorial Day weekend. I sat down in the chair next to his bed and literally in one day wrote a tool that could harness the data that we use to predict treatments to predict potential diagnoses for Bertrand. And it came up with a short list of potential organisms that could be driving this. I think there were about 8 different suggestions on the list. And then I started working with, you know, infectious disease here to start ruling out which ones it could actually be or not be. And then to rule things out even faster, we also employed metagenomics. So I partnered with Sean Levy at Hudson Alpha to do ultra-rapid sequencing of Bertrand's blood and pleural fluid to look for fragments of pathogenic DNA, basically DNA from organisms like Pseudomonas or E. coli that could be causing an infection like this that were floating around inside of Bertrand, which might indicate what this really was. And by combining the list we got from the AI with a set of organisms that came back from this, you know, ultra-rapid metagenomic sequencing, there was really one outlier that stood out, and that was Pseudomonas. There was even a specialized kind of virus called a phage, called a Pseudomonas phage, living inside Bertrand somewhere, eating the Pseudomonas inside of him. So that there were so many clues that were popping out saying this is what it is. So that 4 weeks in, he finally – I mean literally 24 hours after starting his treatment, he left the ICU and was on a regular pulmonary floor after being pretty close to dead the week prior.
Wow. Do you think it is realistic to think that this is something that could be scaled and could become the norm within our medical system?
I absolutely do. And in this case, the economics are in our favor. So the AI part, that's cheap and free. We release Medicanon for free. Anybody can reach out to us and we can run queries for them if they want. And then when it comes to the ultra-rapid genomic sequencing, that's not necessarily cheap, but compared to the cost of an ICU stay, it's honestly trivial. So if we could shave even a few days off an ICU stay, it would pay back pretty fast.
Matthew Might, you, as you already mentioned, advised President Obama on a precision medicine initiative. Where does Medicanron and this sort of artificial intelligence fit into the broader picture of precision medicine and the future of medical care?
So I think Medicanron and AI in medicine more generally are on the near-term implementation side for precision medicine. So I define precision medicine as the use of data to optimize health. And in order to do that, you have to be able to make sense of all the data that's out there and all the data that you can collect on a patient. And tools like Medicanron are the kind of tool that can do that. They can help you make sense of this mountain of data available outside and within a patient to focus it in the direction of a diagnosis and predict a potential treatment. So I think this is cutting edge near term for the implementation of precision medicine. And it's the kind of thing that we're taking very aggressively into the clinic here at UAB. So we're moving this program, which is a research program right now, into the health system as we speak.
It's literally happening right now.
That's right. It is happening right now.
How is Buddy doing today?
Well, he's much better. It was a 5-week hospital stay, so it took a lot out of him. And he's already a pretty fragile kid, so he's not back to where he was pre-admission. He lost like about a third of his weight even. But, he's happy. He's been reunited with his pet fish, which brings him a lot of joy. And today was, in fact, his very first day of sixth grade. So he was very happy to be back in school.
Well, congratulations on that, certainly. And best wishes to you and to Buddy.
Well, thank you.
Matthew Might is director of the Hugh Call Precision Medicine Institute at the University of Alabama, Birmingham. Matt, thanks so much.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Up next, how media coverage of climate change varies from country to country. Living Lab Radio continues after a short break.